Today, if you'll open your Bible and turn to Exodus, the 20th chapter, we're going to look at the Ten Commandments. We're specifically going to talk about the first four commandments. The first four commandments show our relationship to God, and the last six, our relationship to our fellow human beings. Humanly, people seem to not mind the last six as much as they do the first four, because the first four are the ones that all religions seem to have a problem with. If you look at the Pauline theology, people that teach that the law is done away with, when you really get down and question what law they're talking about, they're talking about the law that is represented in the first four commandments. They're not talking about murder or stealing or even bearing false witness or adultery or coveting. All these things are human weaknesses in all societies that have ever existed that man has had. Everybody seems to recognize that that murder is not a good thing, that stealing is not a good thing, that lying and cheating is not a good thing. People still do it, but they recognize that. Where when you come to the first four commandments, the one about having no other gods, it doesn't matter to the modern pagan-based Christians, the ones that their whole concept of their religion is based on ancient paganism amalgamated with selected teachings from the scriptures, selected by them, not selected by God. And then there's the second commandment that has to do with graven images, and that's primarily what I'm going to zero in on today, although we also need to recognize that there is the third commandment that about taking the name of God in vain, and we'll probably do a part two sermon on that one later on and talk about it in a little more detail. And then certainly the fourth commandment is to remember the Sabbath day, and it says to remember it because people have forgotten it. You know, you want a proof of the accuracy of the Bible, there's really a statement that says to remember. Wouldn't be necessary to say that if God didn't realize that man was going to forget it. And so I gave a sermon several weeks ago on keeping the Sabbath. So we've covered that one in pretty good detail, and it's online. But today I want to look at the commandment that says, "You shall not make for yourself a carved image, the likeness of anything that is in the heavens above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them, for I, the Lord, the Eternal, your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquities of the father upon the children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me." You know, there's some commandments that within the commandment, it gives you a consequence to your actions. This is the first one that does that. It says that God will visit the iniquity of the fathers upon their children to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. So he equates making idols to hating him. And then there's also a blessing. This is the first one that just really spells out a specific blessing and showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. And, you know, the third commandment also has a consequence. It says that God will not hold them guiltless for taking his name in vain. We'll look at that in more detail later. And then, of course, the sixth commandment also honor your father and mother, it has a promise at the end of it. And so the commandments themselves point out some blessings for obedience and some curses or consequences of misconduct. So let's talk about the graven images. We live in an age where, you know, religious people, Western pagan based, and that's one of the things that makes modern Christianity, the mainstream Christianity, pagan based, is because of their acceptance of paganism, of carved images. And, you know, you could talk to people that have the carved images, that have them in their churches, or they exist even in people's homes or on the dashboards of their cars or various places, or just a matter of a picture hanging on the wall, supposedly the likeness of Christ, which it's not. No one really knows what Christ looked like. A lot of people guess, but it's a figment of people's imagination. Then there's things that represent religion, religious symbols. You know, the difference between the Roman Church and the Orthodox Church is basically the Roman Church has statues and carved images of various supposed religious people, individuals based on the Bible, they think. The difference between the Roman Church and the Orthodox Church is that the Orthodox Church primarily believes in icons. Icon is a two-dimensional painting, or even like a photograph, a two-dimensional thing, three-dimensional. You know, items like the cross. In fact, we'll talk about that later. The steeple, the obelisk, they're all of pagan origin. The cross predates modern Christianity by centuries as a religious symbol. What about the little fish that you see on the bumper sticker of cars? That's a religious symbol. You know, people say, well, we don't actually bow down and worship them. We know they're stones, but they remind us of God. Blah, 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 blah. Well, the people's excuses for disobedience to God. There's no end to the excuses that human beings can make. But when it comes to the bottom line, the bottom line is, hey, God, we're just not going to obey you. That's what the children of Israel said after God thundered down this law from Mount Horeb. They told Moses, get us a man to tell us, because God's too loud. And, you know, they seem to have implied to Moses, we don't like to hear him because he really sounds like he means what he says. And so that's a question that we all need to ask ourselves. If we actually believe in God, do we really believe that he meant what he said, or that he was just talking to make some interesting reading in the Bible, or something we'd write on a plaque and put on the wall in our house? You know, that can actually become a symbol of idolatry if we were to misuse it. Not that it's wrong to have the Ten Commandments posted on your wall. I would think would be a pretty good thing to do. We need to remember that. Just look at the first commandment. You shall have no other gods before me. The most important thing in your life, the thing you think about most, is your God. The thing that's most important to you. I know people I've talked to that sports, maybe basketball, football, maybe it's golf, maybe it's tennis, maybe it's some other thing, that's the most important thing in their life. I've known people, and I've actually a congregation that I had the men in that congregation, the only thing they wanted to talk about on the Sabbath was cars. They actually worshiped cars over and above God because some of them couldn't sit in church and listen to Bible expounded for an hour and pay any attention. And I observed that. They could sure talk about cars, and they had specific brands. Each person, you know, had their own brand, and it was as if it was an icon to them, something that they couldn't live without. Christ talked about the pearl of great price, something that was you found was extremely valuable, and so you take everything you have and you invest it in that pearl or the field where the treasure is buried or whatever it might be, and that's the most important thing. But Christ said that we need to really store up our treasures in heaven. The most important thing in our life should be our obedience to God. And of course, that's hard for human beings with human nature because our nature pulls us down. We have a tendency to sort of want to blame the devil, like Flip Wilson used to be, the comedian that said the devil made me do it. That's true to a large extent because devil has the world in his back pocket. He has society in his back pocket. Everything's sort of stacked against us, and God did create us with a tendency to want to go that way. It's just human nature. The Bible has plenty to say about human nature. Maybe I'll do a sermon on that before too long, because we have to fight against our own selves to do what is right, against our own mind, against our own character. And so this is very important when it comes to the first four commandments, because this is the place that can separate us from God, because they're the test commands. They're the ones that you have to really do something. You know, I can honestly say that I've never been tempted to murder someone. I've never been angry enough at anyone to even go that far. And there's other commandments I've never been tempted to do. You know, I could use the example about bearing false witnesses or telling untruths, and that that would be a stupid one for me to do because as human beings, we lie to ourselves all the time. Our minds make us think sometimes that there's no way we could be wrong about anything, and so that's a hard one for human beings to deal with. But murder to me is a pretty easy one to deal with because I have no reason to want to murder anybody. I really have no reason to want to commit adultery. And I'm an old man, so maybe that's a good reason in itself, but it doesn't seem to stop some people. There's commandments that I would not consider, and I know you're the same way, doing those things because I would know the consequences. Yet, as human beings, we can look at the first four, and the consequences on these are subtle. There's not an immediate punishment. If you murder somebody, the laws of the land are going to get you pretty quick. If you steal, if you go in and shoplift in a store, the laws of the land are probably going to get you pretty quick. I know people that have done that, people that, well-respected people that have embezzled from banks and city governments and stole things in department stores and stores and had to pay the consequences. So there's a consequence to those last six commandments that society itself brings us. But I really want to zero a little more in on this second commandment, because that's really the thing I want to talk about today. I'm going to reread it in entirety. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in the heavens above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water underneath the earth. Well, how about the little fish symbol? You shall not bow down to them, nor serve them, for I am the Eternal your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers on the children for the third and fourth generations to those who hate me, and showing mercy to thousands of those who love me and keep my commandments. Therefore, you people that want to say the law is done away with, if you want mercy from God, verse 6 of Exodus 20 pretty well says you need to keep the commandments. And we all need God's mercy. There's no doubt about that. And I can speak for myself there with a loud voice. We all need God's mercy because we fall short of His standard. The best we can do, we fall short of His standards. But I want to talk about one particular image that people in modern pagan-based Western Christianity, my favorite little term for the counterfeit in this age, and it's an accurate term, their favorite little symbol. You know, other than the steeples on church, the obelisk that is actually a phallic symbol of ancient paganism, and that's. But I want to talk about the cross. The cross, a symbol supposedly of Christ's crucifixion. If you'll notice in the sermons that I've given over the years, I don't use that word because it's not the way that Christ died. If we just look at the scriptures and we see what the Bible says, and I always, a lot of people would argue with me on this, it doesn't really make any difference what I'm talking about, and that is the fact that Christ was executed by the Romans. The Jews consented to it, had a hand in it, but actually the Romans are the ones that executed Christ. And the Greek word is not cross in the original Greek. It's styros, an upright pail. I believe the Bible says that the manner in which he would die, he would be lifted up like Moses lifted up the staff in the wilderness with the serpent around it to heal the children of Israel of their snake bites. I think we all know the story and what the Bible has to say about it. Christ said that was the way he would be sacrificed. And that's pretty simple. It wasn't a cross. The cross predates modern Christianity by thousands of years as a religious symbol. And again, so does the obelisk. And, you know, people will say, well, it doesn't make any difference. I really don't bow down and serve them. They just make me think of God. And that's a cop-out. Because you make them as a religious symbol. If they're a religious symbol to you, you are in effect bowing down to serve it. Now, something happened on the way home from the Feast of Tabernacles. We were on our way home and we stopped in a convenience store for a bathroom stop. My wife met a person we'd went to church with several years ago. Church that we belonged to at that time. And she had also come from the feast, different site. We hadn't gone to the feast together. And I'd actually baptized this woman, and she's a good converted person. not that my opinion counts, only God's opinion really counts. And my wife had a conversation with her and asked her how she was and how some of her family was, and they had a little conversation, and Cindy had a new purse and discussed the purse, and Cindy said the store where she bought it really had some pretty ones, but they had crosses on them, and she wouldn't buy them naturally because we don't believe in religious symbols because of the second commandment. The woman said, well, where I went to the feast, the women in the congregation that I attend, and they happen to be two different organizations, she said they bought purses with crosses on them, and they've been taking them to church. And said, the women are wearing crosses. And then this surprised me a little bit, although not a lot, because I saw years ago how things were going in some of those fragmentations of the Church of God, the same way that things went in the first century with the church, and how doctrine began to be watered down and people started going along with the crowd. And you know, people do that. If somebody else does it, seems to be an excuse for human beings to do the same thing. People follow the crowd. If as human beings, we have a nature to follow the crowd. If we find people around us doing a certain thing, then we think that it's okay to do that thing ourselves. It's an excuse. We hear that from children all the time. When parents correct children, how many times have you heard your children say, well, so-and-so does it, why can't I do it? My friends do it, why can't I do it? And I don't think there's a parent out there that hasn't probably heard that excuse. And we as God's children, make that excuse to Him a lot. We forget one of the clearest scriptures in all the Bible, and it's hard for me to understand why people pay no attention to it at all. Christ said that wide and straight is the path that leads to destruction. And that's where you're going to find everybody going. I'm putting this in my own words. And He said, narrow and crooked is the path that leads to life, and few be they that find it. Because they're following the crowd, they're not following God or God's instructions. But why I'm talking about these first four commandments are so important to follow God's instructions. Now, we could debate the cross over the upright pail all day, and there's people that would... In fact, I know people that claim to be ministers of Jesus Christ that would argue with me all a long time about the cross. You know, I saw a documentary several weeks ago, and it was about the life of Christ, and most of it was imagination and garbage and this and that, but it did mentioned the fact that gave a lot of historical and archaeological evidence that a lot of the holy sites in Israel that are labeled holy sites by modern Christianity are not really the actual sites where these things took place, and they were quite honest about that, and I agreed with them. I've been there, and I've been to a lot of those sites, and they're illegitimate if you use the Bible or any of the evidence, most of them. And, in fact, the vast majority of them. But it brought out a point that I'd never considered before. I'd never heard it mentioned. And I hadn't really thought about it, of how Christ had to carry His cross. That's what we see people do. Every once in a while you see somebody walking down the highway with a cross piece of wood, and they're carrying it. And most of the time it's pretty light when it's not something that's real heavy. But they brought out the point in this documentary, and they had a little reenactment, which wasn't authentic, but they were only having him carry a cross piece because they said it was impossible for a man, a particularly injured man, and of course Christ had to have some help, but one of those that was a cross big enough, like they propagate that was used, that a man couldn't carry it, so they had him carrying a cross piece. And you know, that makes pretty sense, but pretty good sense, because he could have carried the styros, by using the Greek word, the upright pail, he could have carried. And that's basically what they had him doing in this documentary, because they knew that the balance and to carry a big cross for an injured man, or even for an able man, was just about an impossibility. And Christ had already been virtually beat to death before he was asked to carry that upright pail with him. Okay, with that said, it really doesn't make any difference. Should we wear a symbol of an upright pail around our neck as a religious symbol, or have it on our purse if we're a lady or a man with I've never seen a cross on a wallet, but I'm sure somebody makes one. Because that is still a graven image for a representation of God. Just like the fish is a graven image of a representation of supposedly Jesus being a fisherman of man. But if you go back into ancient paganism, it's Dagon, the fish god. A lot of religious people wear this fish hat that was the hat of the priests of Dagon. You know, there's not anything new under the sun. As human beings, we can make excuses, and people will make excuses. I guarantee you there'll be people that listen to what I'm saying and they'll scoff at it. And people are free to do that because God has allowed free moral agency. But I just want to ask you one question. Who is your God? And who do you worship? And who sets the rules and the standards for your conduct and your relationship with God? Do you let God set those rules? Or do you let your fellow human beings set those rules? This has been James Throgmorton speaking to you for the Churches of God.